This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Veneria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Veneria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
USA had a bunch of lunatics, but it's even worse than that. This is a money laundering organization for the deep state. I will explain as the show goes on. What a day today. It is our fourth and final hour here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD, 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. Pray to God there's no plane crashes or any other horrible, horrible events that take place this hour. Friday was something. I'll tell you what, it really was. It's a heartbreaking situation, but I just want to, again, give my best to everybody in the great Northeast and the cops and the firefighters, first responders, just unbelievable work Friday night. Unbelievable. And over the weekend. And it's still going on. So God bless the great Northeast and the poor family and everybody impacted by this. It's just it's heartbreaking for our city. It really is. All right. So as I mentioned, right before I got on the air today, and we spent a lot of part of the show on this, the president came out and spoke from the Oval Office. Well, it was one of those things where he did signing statements, and so they ran on the audio of the media. And then the president, they played it, and he spoke for a while. We grabbed a ton of clips from that, and then we you know, we played a lot of it throughout the show. But there's a clip I want to play for you. It's a little bit in detail. So first of all, this whole situation of USAID, right? It sounds like it's a charitable thing, United States aid, like we're giving aid out, right? USAID. And it's got one of those, a nice name, right? USAID. Oh, USAID coming to help. It's the United States Agency for International Development. It sounds like a charity pass-through. This is one of those government scams where they find ways to embezzle money for purposes that enrich the deep state. That's exactly what this is. Here's what the president said about it today in the Oval Office.
The first term, though, USAID was something that you liked in some respects.
I love the concept of it. Yeah,
that's a program.
Sure, I love the concept, but they turn out to be radical left lunatics. And the concept of it is good, but it's all about the people.
Yeah, it is radical left lunatics, but it's even worse than that. It's even worse than that. And the president is being kind here in saying all this. What is USAID? So there's this guy, and he's pretty remarkable. His name is Mike Ben Cyber on Twitter. He's the executive director of FFO Freedom, which is the Foundation for Freedom Online, which is about protecting digital liberties and telling the story of online censorship. He himself is a former State Department cyber, author of The Unpublishable Monstrosity, Weapons of Mass Deletion. So a friend of mine sent this to me this morning, my friend Laura. She sends me a lot of great stuff, and I'm grateful for her doing so. I woke up to this morning, and I watched this video. It's a little bit long, but I want to play it. It's 3 minutes. I'm going to stop it and talk over it, but it's really important to understand this. It's very eye-opening because it's really easy in all of the outrage and everything that's going on today of USAID and the attitude they've adopted over the years. Like, for example, I mean, this is what Secretary of State Marco Rubio said about it. I know we played this earlier, but it's worth reiterating.
As I said is, yeah, there are things that USAID, that we do through USAID that we should continue to do and we will continue to do. But everything they do has to be in alignment with the national interest and the foreign policy of the United States. And the attitude that USAID has adopted over the years is, no, we are independent of the national interest. We fund programs irrespective of whether it's aligned or not aligned with the foreign policy. That's ridiculous. These are taxpayer dollars. Every penny that we spend in foreign aid needs to be in furtherance and aligned with the national interest and the national and the foreign policy of the United States. So this is not about ending the programs that USAID does per se. There are things that it does that are good, and there are things that it does that we have strong questions about. It's about the way it operates as an entity. And they're supposed to take direction from the State Department, policy direction. They do not. Not only do they not take policy direction, they're completely uncooperative. When you ask questions, when you try to go in and find out, okay, what does this program do? Who's getting the money? Why was this funded? Why are we doing this? Why aren't you coordinating with the embassy or the State Department? Their attitude is, we don't have to answer to you because we are independent. We answer to no one. Well, that's not true, and that will
not. That was Secretary of State Mark.
Okay, now, to understand what USAID is, and this is really remarkable stuff here, okay? And the left is losing their friggin' minds over this, and they want to pretend like it's about cutting off money for charitable projects throughout the world. And look, admittedly, I think everyone can understand why you would think that just by the name, USAID. Oh, the U.S. is giving aid. It is the Agency for International Development. So what does that mean? So let's take a listen to what Mike Ben Cyber, how he breaks it down. He understands this stuff. This is where he used to work. He used to work in this, I'm not going to say space because I hate that term, but in this area of government.
The name USAID, they focus on aid. They focus on thinking like it's humanitarian work. But aid is not actually in the name of USAID. USAID stands for the United States Agency for International Development, not aid. It's not a charity. And international development is simply capacity building. It is local and regional capacity building done across the whole world, i.e. internationally. The primal id in USAID, international development, is about capacity building of assets that can be used by either the Pentagon, the State Department, or the CIA for their own activities. So if you're the Secretary of State and you were asked by the National Security Council or the President to do something in a different country, overthrow their government, stop the passage of a bill in a foreign country's legislature, how would you do that? And the first thing that I said is you would look at the assets that already exist in the country. Do we need new assets in addition to the ones that we currently have, or are the existing assets, can they achieve this simply by giving them enough money?
Now, these assets include things like media institutions, think tanks, unions, NGOs, bank and asset managers, equity financial stakeholders, private businesses, student groups, etc. OK, so these are the assets that he talks about. What do we have in those countries? What else do we need to expand upon here? OK.
Giving them enough resources, giving them enough training, giving them enough support. One of the main ways that capacity building would be financed would be through USAID. USAID would say that it's doing something, funding a hospital system, funding universities, funding civil society organizations, funding media institutions, funding independent media in the region. Sorry, that's something in my eye. Independent media in the region on USAID payroll. And those institutions, those assets would then be bigger and more powerful and more capable of serving the State Department's goal, aka advancing U.S. national interests.
Okay, now, it sounds good from a 50,000 foot view. All right, great. So we're going to send all this money over there, and then that's going to help us expand United States national interests abroad. Okay, this is where you get into the idea of then who's in charge. Because to President Trump's point, if they're radical lunatics, think about the kind of U.S. national interest they're pushing abroad. Probably the same whack jobs who were at the Democrat leadership convention and started off by apologizing for all of America's indigenous colonialism, blah, 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 blah. You see how the people behind this have a lot to do with this, right?
USAID has a bigger budget than the State Department, over $50 billion. It is a bigger budget than the CIA. The entire intelligence community only has about $72 billion. So that's the CIA plus the 16 others. And USAID has a bigger budget than the CIA and is almost the size of the entire intelligence community combined. That is how important USAID is to American statecraft. It is an intelligence community, a State Department, and a Pentagon assistance organization rolled into one. I just copied this from the USAID website. USAID carries out U.S. foreign policy, advances U.S. national interests by promoting broad-scale human progress. At the same time, it expands stable, free societies, creates markets and trade partners for the United States, and fosters goodwill abroad. The operative phrases here are carries out U.S. foreign policy. This is not charity work. This is not aid. This is cynical, self-serving purposes.
And cynical, self-serving purposes, which seem to be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on who's in charge. This is crucial. Now, the other point of this, too, which is it should be eye-opening to you, it was eye-opening to me, to think in terms of how the United States of America uses the United States Agency for International Development to carry out foreign policy, advance U.S. national interests by promoting broad-scale human progress, and expands stable, free societies, creates markets and trade partners for the United States and fosters goodwill abroad. Open societies. What does that sound like to you? Well, George Soros says the whole open society. That's the whole thing. Okay. Now again, it's even deeper. It's a little bit deeper than that. Let's keep going with this.
What is it seeking to do? Free societies, open societies. Why does USAID want other countries to be open societies? Because that's how you get the influence in. If a country is a closed society, they're closed off from USAID influence. We cannot capacity build our assets there. Closed societies box USAID out. China is a closed society. That is why we have not been able to topple the government of China, despite having tried for 100 years now almost. We have not been able to topple Putin from Russia. Why? Because Russia is a closed society. Like China, they kicked USAID out. It is not an open society. And so the USAID can't just take over their entire media ecosystem by funding 100 different media propaganda outlets in the region to sway hearts and minds. And remember, that's what this is. It's hearts and minds and cash. That's what soft power is. They call it hearts and minds work, but it's cash that does the moving of those hearts and minds, especially of the leaders of the movements.
Hearts and minds, baby. Hearts and minds. Okay. Now, knowing that and understanding that, you can really get a sense of how crucial it is to realize that whoever's on the deciding end of where that money goes and how it's used and how it's advanced can either be really in the United States' best interest or really not in our interest. Kevin Roberts, the president of the Heritage Foundation, talks about how the United States Agency for International Development, it's not USAID. If you want to say it properly, it's USAID. Okay, I know it sounds, USAID, but it's not aid. It's not aid in that sense. He explains really how the left has been able to use this. Take a listen.
One of the underappreciated agencies in government is USAID. It's the International Aid Agency and the State Department. And the early indications are, as they are for every other agency, is that President Trump is really playing ball here. The reason I mention it for your audience, Sean, is that I've learned since I've been at Heritage that this is the vehicle for spreading all of the wokeness, all of the DEI nonsense, not just to some run-of-the-mill country, but to our allies. I think, for example, about a number of meetings I've had with ambassadors from various African nations who in their culture, broadly speaking, obviously Africa is diverse, are saying socially and culturally, even religiously, we're very much allied with the United States, but the Biden-Harris regime imposed upon us through USAID dollars and programs a set of beliefs we simply can't subscribe to. But this was the dilemma that these African nations are having, and that is, do I reject that on social and cultural grounds, or do I take the easier path of taking funds from the Chinese Communist Party? This is the kind of thing, the reform of the State Department writ large, which Rubio's already begun, but in particular, something like USAID, that won't make the front page of the newspapers, but it's going to be a vital test of how well Trump and Vance do at completely reforming the American government.
Okay, now knowing that, Is the goal really to shut down USAID? Probably not. Probably not, because it is a way for the United States to get what it wants abroad. If the United States of America is interested in winning hearts and minds by doling out cash and then being able to get good press in the country and then infiltrate the society, that's probably not something the United States of America wants to give up. You notice how the first question to President Trump today was, hey, wasn't this something you supported early on? And he said, well, it's a great concept, but it's the radical lunatics who are running it. So this is where you get into the problem now. Now, to understand who's in support of keeping things status quo, as Elon Musk put it like this, Elon Musk is targeting USAID for burning American tax dollars. And now people like Jamie Raskin are screaming about this. So if Jamie Raskin's upset about this, if Jamie Raskin's upset, you know that they're onto something here. You know that they're figuring out how corrupt this agency has become and how it has become the primary vehicle to spread wokeism and that America sucks around the world. That's really been the propaganda. America, bad place. Think of how bad our rap is around the world. We've got a bad rep around the world. Why? Because USAID has been instrumental in helping tell everybody the story that America sucks. Not that we're great, not that we're the good guys, that we're terrible. We have to atone. This terrible country. So here's Raskin freaking out.
Elon Musk. Elon Musk, you didn't create USAID. The United States Congress did for the American people.
Right.
And just like Elon Musk did not create USAID, he doesn't have the power to destroy it. And who's going to stop him? We are. Yes. We're going to stop him. Yes. Elon Musk, you may have illegally seized power over the financial payment systems of the United States Department of Treasury, but you don't control the money of the American people. The United States Congress does that under Article 1 of the Constitution. Yes. And just like the president, who is elected to something, cannot impound the money of the people. We don't have a fourth branch of government called Elon Musk. And that's going to become real clear.
Yes.
You know what this is, right? This is called deflection. Look over here at the shiny
this
object,
illegal,
Elon Musk.
Illegal, unconstitutional interference with congressional power is threatening lives all over the world. I'm hearing from my constituents who work for USAID and USAID contractors in Maryland, in Washington, all over the world, and they're telling us that this is a killer in terms of their cutoff of HIV and AIDS preemption. It's a killer in terms of...
First of all, this is exactly what I mean. It's like, oh my God, AIDS and HIV assistance money is getting cut off. You heard the explanation of what this agency really does. So it's under the guise of, hey, here's money for AIDS and HIV prevention. In other words, here's us giving your country money. How much of that money actually reaches the people who are dealing with AIDS and HIV? And how much of it is a payoff to the countries so the United States of America can achieve whatever goal it has in that country? It's like Ukraine not getting the money, which we talked about earlier in the show today. Zelensky turns around and goes, all this money that was sent over, we didn't get it. How much of the money that USAID sends over there actually reaches the people? See, that's part of what's being exposed here. Where does it all go? Where does it all go? I can't take any more of Raskin. His voice just gets to me. It grates on me. I think President Trump on the tarmac of Air Force One yesterday, when he was discussing this and was asked a question, which he also said today, very similar, but it's this.
Well, it's been run by a bunch of radical lunatics, and we're getting them out. USAID, run by radical lunatics, and we're getting them out, and then we'll make a decision.
Okay, we're getting them out, and then we'll make a decision. I don't think it's really going anywhere. I think it has to be retooled for reform that actually serves America's interests. Here's more of what Secretary Marco Rubio said, the Secretary of State, regarding USAID. I've got that. Technical difficulty on
that. Well, look, I mean, my frustration with USAID goes back to my time in Congress. It's a completely unresponsive agency. It's supposed to respond to policy directives of the State Department, and it refuses to do so. So the functions of USAID, there are a lot of functions of USAID that are going to continue, that are going to be part of American foreign policy, but it has to be aligned with American foreign policy. I said very clearly during my confirmation hearing that every dollar we spend and every program we fund, that will be aligned with the national interest of the United States. And USAID has a history of sort of ignoring that and deciding that they're somehow a global charity separate from the national interest. These are taxpayer dollars. And so I'm very troubled by these reports that they've been unwilling to cooperate with people who are asking simple questions about what does this program do, who gets the money, who are our contractors, who's funded, and that sort of level of insubordination makes it impossible to conduct the sort of mature and serious review that I think foreign aid writ large should have. We're spending taxpayer money here. These are not donor dollars. These are taxpayer dollars, and we owe the American people the assurances that every dollar we are spending abroad is being spent on something that furthers our national interest.
Now, it's also important to note, and this is the big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, V-A-N-A-R-I-A. We talked earlier about the link with USAID and Wuhan and China. We talked all about that. RFK Jr. talked about USAID is actually a CIA front, secretly funneling $5 billion in 2014 to ignite riots in Ukraine. Okay, this is what he told Tucker Carlson. And Victoria Nuland from the Obama administration, who really, I think, has been calling the shots in U.S. foreign policy under Obama and Biden, no question about it.
2014, there are riots in, it's called the Maidan Rebellion in Ukraine, which we're not told that we are financing those riots. The newspapers never told us. Our government never told us. USAID, which is a CIA front, put $5 billion into funding those riots. Those riots lead to a coup d'etat against the first democratically elected government of the Ukraine. It was a government that refused to choose sides and to say we're going to be on the side of the West. So we.
Is this breaking up? Oh, that's okay. So basically, well, this is what he said. In 1 month before the coup, a leaked call between Victoria Nuland and the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine exposed that she had already handpicked the country's new cabinet. So they're picking the new government a month before the old government is overthrown. That's what happens here. Now, over the weekend, Representative Brian Mast talked about the grift at the agencies and of USAID, for example, as Margaret Brennan on CBS News was fretting over the demolition of USAID. And he said, look, the Trump administration comes in, or representatives like myself that do oversight, the agencies will literally not tell us what they are writing grants for. Literally, or they will lie about it, or they will tell the new political appointees under the Trump administration, I'm just not going to tell you that. Those are real things that have happened. So the way that you make them come and answer for when they are actually sending dollars is to say, we're freezing that, we're putting it on hold. Do you know that part of the complaint with what Elon Musk did is that USAID said a lot of this stuff was top secret or classified. So ask yourself this question. Why would an agency that's giving out aid, why would any of that be classified? Why would any of that be top secret? In other words, in the pushback by the left today and their hysteria, they're screaming that Elon Musk comes in over the weekend, starts shutting down computers and access to the employees at USAID. And they're going, a lot of this stuff is classified. A lot of this stuff is actually national security stuff. A lot of this stuff is actually high-level intelligence. At the United States Agency for International Development? So you see, it really is a CIA front. It's a deep state front. Of course it is. And that's why, as the left is now trying to distract everybody by screaming about how we're cutting off aid for HIV and AIDS. No. That, why would you have to classify that stuff? This is about sending money to exert United States influence abroad. And the problem with that, of course, is that those people who control what that means, the what is the U.S. best interest abroad, have been radical lunatics. So pay no attention to the shiny little object over here regarding aid. Because the whole thing has been a cover. All right, a lot more on this, a lot more on everything. Don't go away.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, so Mexico and Canada give in to President Donald Trump. Shocking. I know we're all surprised by that. Welcome back to the show, our fourth and final hour. Man, it's been a busy one today. Holy cow. And I'm exhausted from doing Josh Shapiro impressions, so I can't do it again, I promise. But if you missed it in the 5 o'clock hour, towards the end of the hour, go back and listen to it. Go back and listen to the whole show if you missed a second of it. It's really, really important stuff. I wanted to give you some updates on some things, other things too as well. You know, big news, obviously, today, brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com. Two locations to serve you in Cinnamon City and Woodbury, both Canada and Mexico. Giving in to President Donald Trump. Our long national nightmare is over. The guacamole war is over for now. Chuck Schumer can have his guac and his Corona at his lame Super Bowl party that no one's going to go to. And you can have your maple syrup and your Canadian bacon. Although why anybody would eat Canadian bacon when you have perfectly good pork roll? Never really understood. And something that's always frustrated me is when you go to a place and you order a pork roll and cheese and they go, is that Canadian bacon? No, it's not Canadian bacon. Did I ask for Canadian bacon? I asked for pork roll. Anyway, so, or if you're in North Jersey, Taylor Ham. There obviously is no Central Jersey, so nobody can order anything because it doesn't exist. Anyway, but I still love Chuck Schumer, just such an ass clown, right? I mean, he really is. He's just a clown. Just a clown.
Let's just take Super Bowl Sunday, okay? It's going to affect beer, okay? Most of it, Corona here, comes from Mexico. It's going to affect your guac, because what is guacamole made of? Avocados, both from Mexico.
I mean, if you get invited to a Super Bowl party and there's no guac and there's no Corona, you better turn around and leave. Am I right? Am I right? But anyway, both Mexico and Canada have given in to President Trump's threats, and each country will be sending 10,000 troops in Mexico's case and personnel in Canada's place to deal with the invasion at their borders. And now they'll negotiate on the tariffs, and hopefully this will be the end of unfair tariffs against the United States of America, because if you hate tariffs, you should not be okay with tariffs placed on American goods. Right? I mean, to be consistent, if you are somebody who consistently hates tariffs and you feel that they are a tax, then you should not want them placed on American goods. If Trump can level the playing field on that, that would be a win for capitalism, for the free market, for all of it. So let's hope it happens. I have a feeling it will. You know what I found interesting, too, is that this whole issue of Phil Murphy, and I mean, I mocked him for his grandstanding about harboring an illegal immigrant. I doubt he really is. Or somebody who's undocumented harboring them. I mean, this is one of those issues where people are like, what's Trump going to do about it? Nothing. I mean, don't give the governor any attention. It's what he wants. He would love for the feds to come to the governor's. I don't know if it's a drum thwack at the governor's official residence or at his home up in Rumson, New Jersey, where he lives. I'm assuming it's his home. I don't think he lives in the governor's mansion. But who knows? Maybe he's got squatters in the whole governor's mansion. Who the hell knows? I don't know. But oh, he would love that. You imagine the positioning that would give Murphy going into 2025 or 2028, excuse me, if Trump sent the feds to surround the governor's home, demanding they hand over an illegal immigrant. Now, there's plenty of illegal immigrants for them to choose. If I were them, I wouldn't give Murphy the attention that he so desperately seeks, because that's what it is about. You know, that's why he's saying this, because he's daring them. You know, come at me. Come at me. So that's what he ultimately wants to achieve there. And Trump don't play that game. You know what I mean? Don't play that game. And we'll see. But ultimately, I think what we're going to find in the end, as all of this plays out, is it's going to be better for everybody. Oh, by the way, Bernie Sanders suggested that he's not closed off to confirming Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I found that to be fascinating. And a whole bunch of former intelligence officials who served with Tulsi Gabbard came out and said they enthusiastically support Tulsi's nomination for Director of National Intelligence. And Susan Collins, some breaking news, says she'll back Tulsi Gabbard for Director of National Intelligence. That coming out just a short time ago here in our fourth and final hour. Susan Collins of Maine says she will back Tulsi Gabbard for Director of National Intelligence, all but confirming that Tulsi Gabbard will be the DNI director. So Bobby Kennedy, Cash Patel, and Tulsi Gabbard will all get in. And I think you may even pick up some Democrat support for Bobby Kennedy, too, because the MAHA movement and being anti-pharma. I mean, to listen to Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren shill for Big Pharma in such a manner was painful. Was it not painful to listen to? Absolutely painful. These two, for them to take the side of Big Pharma over Bobby Kennedy, and to pretend like when Bernie's like, oh, no, I don't take a single dollar from Big Pharma. It's just the people that work there who cash the checks and then give it to me. I think nobody believes that, man. But he said he's not opposed to it, because really, if you're Bernie taking on Big Pharma, questioning all of these massive companies who make, as Bernie puts it, billions and billions and billions of dollars off the backs of our seniors. And there was a time that he used to talk about how people couldn't, they were blind and deaf and they couldn't afford eyeglasses and hearing aids. And like, you think of Vermont as just this wasteland of people walking around blind and deaf, and they're overweight and they have diabetes and they can't see and they can't hear. And so if that's the case, then you'd want to, I don't know, support all those people and not be a shill for Big Pharma, I would think. Right? I would think so. But I'm guessing right now that as these massive shakeups across federal agencies continue, you're going to see Cash Patel will be the FBI director, Bobby Kennedy will be the Secretary of Health and Human Services, and Tulsi Gabbard will be the Director of National Intelligence. I think all of these things are going to happen. I think it's great that it's going to happen. It makes me very, very happy that it's going to happen. And I hope it happens. I really do. I hope it happens in a big way, because they will be great. All three of them will be fantastic, and they'll be disruptors, which is exactly what we need. All right, coming up, the president signed an executive order ending critical race theory, the radical gender ideology, and all the other nonsense in our schools. This is keeping a promise. We will talk to a prominent activist on this issue, why it is a great thing for our children and for America. Don't go away.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, joining us now on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, Dr. Brandi Shufatinsky, and I nailed that name. She's a social worker, writer, researcher, and advocate. She has worked towards advancing the rights of victims and survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault through practice, education, and research, and is now focusing her advocacy on developing intercultural and academic opportunities to enhance liberal democratic ideals. So you came on the show today to talk about President Trump's executive order on CRT and racial gender ideology, and I appreciate your time today, Dr. Shufatinsky. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. You can call me Brandi.
I'll call you Brandi. All right. You're a fine one. You probably have heard that a million times, I guess, right?
That's what I got my name from, so yeah.
Did you really?
I did.
No, that's very cool. All right. I mean, I love a good story like that. That's where your parents, like, into rock and roll or...
all kinds of music, and it was the 70s, so I'm sure any Brandi born in the 70s is probably because of Looking Glass.
Probably because of that, right? Exactly. So the idea of CRT, radical gender ideology, in our schools, something that parents are talking a lot about. I mean, I have a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 4-year-old, and President Trump's executive order, give me your thoughts on it.
I think that he actually was listening to some of the concerns of parents who have been so often kind of cast aside when having concerns about what was happening in their kids' classrooms. So we have had, especially since COVID, when schools went on to Zoom and parents were able to kind of get a look at what was actually happening in their kids' classrooms, what kids were being exposed to, what they were learning, there was this groundswell of questions, concerns, parents starting to attend school board meetings, which usually, you know, before that were pretty boring and empty. And there was a backlash against that, backlash against parental involvement.
Backlash against parental involvement, I'd say absolutely. I mean, considering the fact that they called us domestic violent extremists at one point, threatened to have the FBI come to school board meetings.
Right. And I mean, I'm never one to, of course, I don't think that any school board meeting or any place of learning should devolve into any type of violence. But what we actually saw was parents just asking questions were being slurred. They were being called racist or transphobic or, you know, yeah, domestic terrorists. They were being labeled all of these horrible things simply for posing a question about what was happening in their kids' schools or even just, you know, wanting to be a little bit more involved in on education committees and having a bit of say of what their kids are being exposed to and what they're learning.
Right. And all right. So we wake up to this curriculum and we find out there's a lot of indoctrination happening right now. And then we want to say something about it and scream about it. And I mean, you know, maybe scream's not the right word. But for a lot of these parents, it was the first time they started getting involved. And then school board races started becoming the center of contention. And then people started yelling about book bans. But really what I saw from where I was standing during all this was it wasn't a book ban. Parents just realized there were certain books in the school that were inappropriate for their kids, and they said, hey, these books don't belong in the school. It's not that they were looking for the government to ban them or they wanted to burn these books. They just said, this particular book should not be in a second grade classroom or in the library, for example.
Exactly. And I think that raises a huge issue and concern that we don't allow pornographic material in elementary school libraries. So why would, under any other circumstance, except when it comes to some form of radical activism, where activists were trying to push an agenda onto children? And I think that what really gets lost here is the age appropriateness of material that kids are exposed to.
Right.
Before, I mean, when I was a kid, when I went to school many, many years ago, people talked about age appropriateness. What's age appropriate curricula for kids to be introduced to? And that was the focus because the center of education and learning in K through 12 education was the child. It was the student. It wasn't teachers unions. It wasn't activist organizations. It was the child and what's in the best interest of the student.
And you posted on your Twitter account, and I highly recommend you follow Brandi at 76Brandi76. Foreign influence in our university system was uncovered a few years ago. Now we're learning that our K through 12 education system has been infiltrated by malign foreign actors hell-bent on indoctrinating American youth. That's not good, Brandi. That's not good at all.
No, it's dangerous. This poses a very real national security threat. And I think that up until recently, finally, people are paying attention to it. If we have the next generation of leaders political leaders, military leaders, entertainers, artists being indoctrinated into an ideology that they think they should dismantle our democratic republic. That's a threat to our national security. And that's actually what's happening. We have foreign actors that are funding activist community organizations that are providing teacher training and professional development, and actually working side by side with school districts developing curricula that is in classrooms today.
Yeah, and the curricula that's in classrooms today. I mean, I know you've been tweeting a lot about the situation in Israel too. The ideology, there has to be oppressors and then there's oppressed, and this notion that our kids have to learn this and believe that, for example, you know, Israel's the oppressor, Hamas is being oppressed by them. This is really what CRT, as I view it, is really all about, right? That America is built on this system of systemic racism and hierarchy, and that America imposes its colonial will around the world, and there always has to be an us versus them. And what it causes for our kids is not only, I think, a lot of cognitive dissonance for them, but I think it's just obviously trying to get them, I mean, really, just to hate our country. There's no other way to put it.
And not just our country, but to hate the Western values that our country is built upon. And part of the part that concerns me the most is that it's an all or nothing ideology. I think that it would be ridiculous to pretend that there are no racists and racism has completely been eradicated from individuals in America. I think it's equally ridiculous to say that America is so fundamentally corrupt and built on institutionalized racism that we need to tear it down.
Right.
That ignores the giants on whose shoulders we all stand upon, that won rights for minority groups and risked their lives, some losing their lives to get those wins. That the ideology that America is institutionally and fundamentally and foundationally racist and needs to be dismantled completely erases all of the heroes that I grew up looking up to.
What are your thoughts, Brandy, on DEI and President Trump's comments recently, you know, regarding how we got to get DEI out of things? We got to hire people based on their merit, and we got to return America to a meritocracy.
I'm a big fan of merit. I think that anyone who relies on other people for their lives, whether you're taking public transportation or you have to go into the hospital, we want people that are competent. And I think that it's also easy to make a blanket statement that DEI is bad. And really, the question that keeps getting missed is, well, what's the purpose of DEI? And not looking at DEI used to be one, the E used to be equality, mm-hmm. which that's the point of civil rights, with it, everybody should have equal opportunity and access. But it also started as a D and I, which was really about improving access to opportunities for everybody, which is merit. So in giving opportunity for merit to students, making sure students have access to all the tools necessary so they can learn and achieve and fall back and rely on their merit versus an identity box that gets checked off.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And yet equity has become really a term that, I mean, it frustrates me because it's got such a socialist background to it. This idea that, and we love opportunity of equality in this country, but opportunity of outcome is not American. And yet that's what equity says. And equity also argues then that there's the haves and the have nots. And really it goes against our system of capitalism. I see it for what it really is about, which is the transformation of the system that's made this country so great.
I agree with that. I think that equity actually erases individualism, which is dehumanization at its finest. So outcomes can't be you can't sit there and make everybody have equal outcomes unless you take away opportunity.
Right.
There are people that will be great at certain things and other people won't be so great at those things. So expecting us all to have an equity and outcomes, that sounds like, you know, something that the Soviet Union tried. It sounds like something that the CCP is trying. And I don't think most Americans want our society to look like that. I think that we want people to get out of the way so that we can achieve the greatness that we seek to achieve.
What do you think, I mean, as a social worker too, what kind of challenges are our kids facing right now? Especially, I mean, you know, years after COVID and the kids are getting back in schools and everything. I mean, are our kids good again? Or, I don't know the proper way to say that, but I mean, are the kids okay? Are the kids all right?
I think they can be. and they will be. There is this, again, kind of decentering of what's in the best interest of children mm-hmm. and all of these culture war arguments. And we are seeing, unfortunately, the negative outcomes and consequences of those. The national report card was just released a couple of days ago that showed that only roughly, on average, a third of American students meet basic proficiency in reading and in math. And we can't.
Amazing.
Thinking about what that's going to mean in 10 years, where we have a society where a significant amount of adult young adults are functionally illiterate or can't meet basic proficiency in reading and math, tells me that, well, if we keep on this path, no, the kids won't be okay. Mm-hmm. If we keep on the path of telling kids that if you feel this way, that means you fall into this narrow box and we kind of shrink them down, no, they won't be okay. But what gives me hope and makes me a little bit optimistic, which does not come natural to me, probably as a social worker, is that we are seeing not just parents push back, we're seeing kids push back. Mm-hmm. We're seeing kids kind of being tired of the ridiculousness and tired of being told that if they feel one way or want to dress a certain way, that means that they have to fit in a small, narrow identity box, instead of letting them explore and be curious, which comes natural to children.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. The kids have had enough. They really have. And I think they're seeing through a lot of this woke crap that they have to deal with in schools. Before I let you go, I noticed you've been tweeting a lot about the hostages. So considering that we have a lot of hostages who've been released, not all of them yet, I would be remiss if I didn't get your thoughts on that, Brandy.
I am grateful for everyone that gets returned to their loved ones. It is a blessing. And I am upset that our tax dollars are feeding the people that captured them, the terrorist monsters that committed the horrific atrocity on October 7th and continue to. I do not think that we should be continuing to support and fund any feeding and supporting and so-called humanitarian aid to a terrorist organization. We've seen the recordings, the videos of mm-hmm. them stealing the humanitarian aid. We've heard reports of them using that humanitarian aid to recruit new terrorists. Again, I'm happy for everyone that comes home. I wish it was an all or nothing deal to begin with. I can't imagine the torture of the families waiting to even know if their loved ones are still alive. I think that it's horrific. And I'm hoping and praying that tomorrow gives us good news and more people are returned to their loved ones.
Brandy, thanks for joining me here today in Philadelphia. I really encourage you to follow Dr. Brandy at 76, Brandy76. You're terrific. We'll definitely have you back on the show again. Keep us posted on all your writings and all your thoughts. It's going to be an exciting time in education, an exciting time on restoring normalcy to education. So I look forward to having you back on the show, Brandy. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
This, by the way, is the top story of the day today, brought to you by my buddy, Dr. Mike Venaria, VenariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, VenariaDental.com. Jimmy Fallon's up next, Fox Across America. Make sure you tune in. Keep the conversation going on X at Rich Zeoli. Thank you.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.